Good has afternoon. Joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Are you the first to arrive?
I think so.
Well, if you heard music, then you know.
Brandy
has joined.
Good afternoon, Brandy.
Good afternoon. Okay, I'm going to.
Okay. Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Gedula Chemincha, Tati, Serura, Aleph Bet Gimel, Yutaf Tzavi, Tabel Rinat, Amcha Sagbenu, Saharenu, Nora. Freshayan Sintet Nun. Nagibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kivavat Shamrem. Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shim. Barchem Tacharem Rachame Sitkatcha Tami.
Has joined.
Yachid Ge'er Lamcha Pene Zokre Kudushata. Yud Gimel Lamed, Hei Zayin Ku. Shavatenu Kabel, Ushma Tziyakatenu, Yodea Talumo. Tin Kufal, Tzadi Yud Ta. We have brought the energy of creation into our space. We will now separate between the right column energy and the left column energy of this creation, utilizing the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohei Wahei, Adonai Yohei Wahei, El Rahum V'Hanum, Erech Apayim, V'Rav Chesed V'Emet, Notze chesed la'alafim, Noseya won wafesha, V'chata'a v'nake. We will now connect to the Ma meditation. Yud, Yud, hey, Yud, hey, wav. Yud he wav he yud, yud he, yud he wav, yud he wav he yud, yud he, yud he wav, yud he wav he yud, yud he, yud he wav. Yud he wav he yud, yud he, yud he wav, yud he wav he. Today is the 20th day of the month of Av. Meditation for today is part of our 45 days of meditation. Kedoshim. You be holy. The Kotzke Rebbe added, "Kodem a mensch, unach dem helig mensch." First be a holy, be a mensch, then be holy. Become a mensch. Uva umakom she'en anashim. In a place where there are no men, strive to be a man. That's the literal translation. But clearly the word ish, which is man, and anashim, which is men, mean more than a matter of gender, or simply a human being in this context. The word mensch can be literally translated as a man, but it has a much deeper meaning, as we see from the definition that was provided by Wikipedia in our earlier meditations. Mensch means a person of integrity and honor. According to Leo Rosten, the Yiddish maven and author of The Joys of Yiddish, mensch is someone who admire and emulate someone of noble character. The key to being a true mensch is nothing less than character, rectitude, dignity, a sense of what is right, responsible, and decorous. In Yiddish, from which the word was migrated into American English, mensch roughly means a good person. A mensch is a particularly good person, like a stand-up guy, a person with the qualities one would hope for in a dear friend or trusted colleague. Menschlichkeit are the properties which make one a mensch. When Moses looks from side to side to see if there was anyone around, he was not acting out of self-interest. Moshe was looking for an ish, someone to take action, a mensch in the larger sense of the word. When he realized that it was up to him to act, he did so. In this sense, Moshe's act was not impulsive, but premeditated. There are times we must take action, even though it is not necessarily in our own self-interest. His defense of the Israelite slave would put him on a trajectory that would lead to leadership and eventually to Mount Sinai. Maimonides and Rabbi Shimon Duran offer further perspectives on menschlichkeit. To be a mensch is not an easy thing to accomplish. It is a struggle. The struggle, the natural human response, is to act out of self-interest and self-gratification. We struggle with ourselves to serve the greater good while taking care of ourselves. Sometimes we must teach ourselves how to be a mensch if there is no one else around to teach us how to accomplish this goal in our lives. Rabbi Duran offers an even more surprising perspective in menschlichkeit. For the sages, the highest of all callings is the study of Torah. There are dozens of aphorisms in Avot that express this sentiment, and yet sometimes menschlichkeit necessitates our parting ways with Talmud Torah, with the study of Torah, so that we can strive for the greater good of society. Rabbi Duran uses the example of Moshe smashing the Etzer Dibrot and suggests, based on an interesting reading of a verse in Psalms, that there are times when we must abrogate the law in the greater interest of pursuing the higher callings of society. Contemplate. Look at your actions that hurt another person. Was this action necessary in the context of the higher callings of society? Do not use this as an excuse, but evaluate it honestly. Was there another way to achieve this goal? Our class today can be found on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix. In row 11, in the first column on the left, place basic class 11 is on reincarnation. It's on Gilgulim. So we've been studying advanced reincarnation, but There is still much to learn from even this basic class, and it's good to review it. It will be asking the question, why do people die? Let us say that the eighth verse of the Anabikoa in a whisper. And now we can start our class with the Lashem Yehud. Lashem Yehud Kutchabrichu Ishkinte Bibkilu Urchimud Kilu Udkilu Urchimu Leyakta Lashem Yudhe Bavate Yehuda Shalim Bashem Kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah, Lasok Torah mitzvah, Vayhino amad Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh yadeinu kanunei aleinu maaseh yadeinu kanuneihu. Many people do not think that Judaism embraces reincarnation. They consider this an Eastern religious concept. Yet it is a basic tenet of Judaism for at least the last 3,500 years, ever since the giving of the Esser Dibrot. Most teachers indicate that reincarnation is not in the Torah scroll, and this is also false. Below, I will give you some background from Wikipedia that follows this corruption, so that one can understand how this misunderstanding comes about. The Hebrew word for wheel is gilgul, and this is also the word for reincarnation, gilgulim. Please consider that reincarnation is the activation of the wheel of life. One keeps returning to a life that needs tikkun, or correction, until one is complete. If one is not complete in one's correction at the time of one's death, then the process of a wheel returning to the physical world becomes necessary. One actually comes
has joined
this concept of reincarnation more easily, in my opinion, by asking the question, why do people die? Kabbalah answers this with three explanations and one statement. The statement is people no longer have a need to die. We deal with the questions that arise from this statement in our class on healing and sickness, and also in the class on mind over matter. One thing to keep in mind for this class of reincarnation, there are two paths to complete one's tikkun, the path of Torah and the path of pain and suffering and chaos. These two paths have nothing to do with religious or how religious one is, only with whether one is working to grow their merits through the doing of mitzvot with the correct consciousness. What is the correct consciousness? This is defined in our class on consciousness. For now, suffice to say, outward shows of humility and religiosity does not cause the completion of a correction, and sickness and chaos and death cleanses some actions, but it is possible to achieve tikkun through the path of pain and suffering alone. One final thought on this subject. Why go through a longer, more painful process and path when it can be done by doing your spiritual work yourself, by consciously choosing to do so? Kabbalah teaches the three explanations of why people die are as follows. One dies when they have used up their length of years that they were given to them when they came into this incarnation without completing their tikkun. Because those length of years have built into them the capability of achieving your tikkun. The second explanation. One dies when they complete their tikkun. Once the tikkun is complete, there is no reason to stay in the world. We will discuss why many women seem to stay in this world after their husbands die. And the third explanation. Sometimes a woman marries someone who is not her cosmic soulmate. Then when her cosmic soulmate has earned the merit to marry her, the spiritual laws say she must marry him. If she is already married, either she divorces, which is a mitzvah, or her present husband must die. For some men, his love is so strong that he will feel more pain than he can bear watching his divorced wife marry her soulmate. In the case, Hashem in his mercy causes this person to die before his time. And this is one of the major reasons that it is a mitzvah to divorce. Yes, I know your rabbi never told you that. And this is an unwritten commentary. When that man cannot be happy for his ex-wife after the divorce, that she is marrying someone that she knows will love her, cherish her, care for her. When he cannot be happy with for her, this is idol worship. This is hatred for no reason. Continuing. The reason that the rabbis do not teach this, although some are beginning to do so, is they do not want religious people who do things because Hashem commands them to divorce a wife after 30 years in anticipation of their impending death. Of course, a marriage that is made in heaven or a marriage that is made by people glue the soul halves back together during the marriage ceremony. It is also why many modern couples that live together for a number of years and then decide to marry, and within a year or two to find themselves in divorce. This is because the marriage ceremony can only glue people who are correct tikkun partners. We will discuss more of these issues in our advanced reincarnation classes, which is approximately 200 classes. I hope that I have not upset people with the above information. My job as a Kabbalah teacher is to provide information. Your job as a student is to determine if this information is truth for you. What if it is not truth for you? The Creator does not care. The tools that are taught in Kabbalah will still work for you. So some of them you choose not to use in this lifetime. Eventually, in another lifetime, you will choose to use them. Let us turn to the concept mentioned above called cosmic soulmate. In Hebrew, the word Adam refers to humanity. Humanity consists of men and women. In Kabbalah, a man is a male soul and a female soul in unity. That is the purpose of marriage. As the souls descend into their bodies, the spiritual souls split into male and female halves. Usually the male arrives first and the female a few years later. Why this happens is important to understand. Women have a choice to reincarnate or not. Sometimes they decide to stay above when their male half comes down in an incarnation. They also always get cleansed in Gehinnom, while men may or may not get cleansed in Gehinnom. This is an unwritten commentary. This comes from the idea that if you study Torah, you're not able to go to Gehinnom. You must return in a Gilgul, in a reincarnation, to complete your tikkun. In our generation, we find women studying Torah where 200 years ago they realized they could not, or they did not, or they were prevented from studying Torah. But as long as they are studying Torah, they no longer can go to Gehinnom. And thus, they are subject to the laws of Gilgulim as well in our generation. Since a woman is totally pure when she leaves Gehinnom, this was before our generation, and it's also for the women who do not study Torah. If she were to reincarnate with her male half, his soul is so filthy with sin, since he has reincarnated and not gone to Gehinnom to cleanse any of his actions from last lifetime, then there is no affinity between these two halves of one soul. The woman would not find the man attractive, since his rough humor and ways would not be attractive to her pure essence. In order to create this attraction in the physical world, the woman accepts some of the tikkun of the male half of the soul. She never is lower than the male half when she arrives. When she can veil herself through her actions during this lifetime, she arrives higher than the male, but close enough that there can be an attraction between the two halves of this one soul. Let us now turn to the Wikipedia information. The Gilgulim describes a Kabbalistic concept of reincarnation. In Hebrew, the word Gilgul means cycle, and Neshamot is the plural for souls. Souls are seen to cycle through lives or incarnations, being attached or inserted into different human bodies over time. Which body they are associated with depends on their particular task in the physical world. Spiritual levels of the bodies of predecessors, and so on. The concept relates to the wider processes of history in Kabbalah, involving cosmic tikkun, messianic rectification, and the historic dynamic of ascending lights and descending vessels from generation to generation. The esoteric explanations of Gilgul were articulated in Jewish mysticism by Isaac Luria in the 16th century as part of the metaphysical purpose of creation. It was also taught much earlier, back at the time of Moses, and it is written in the Torah, as we will come to understand. History of the concept of Gilgul in Jewish thought. The notion of reincarnation, while held as a mystical belief by some, is not an essential tenet of traditional Judaism. It is not mentioned in traditional classical sources such as the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, the classical rabbinic works of the Mishnah and the Talmud, or Maimonides' 13 Principles of Faith. in the Yom Kippur liturgy, the tale of the 10 martyrs being killed by the Romans as an atonement for the souls of the 10 brothers of Joseph for selling him into slavery is read in every Orthodox Jewish community. Additionally, books of Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism teach a belief in Gilgul, the transmigration of souls. And hence, the belief is universal in the Hasidic Judaism, which regards the Kabbalah as sacred and authoritative. Among well-known rabbis who respected the idea of reincarnation, the Sadia Gaon, who lived in the 10th century, David Kimhi, Chasdei Trisas, Yedaya Bedershi, from the early 14th century, Joseph Albo, Abraham Ibn Daud, and Leon de Modena, among the Geonim. Chai Gaon argued with Sadia Gaon in favor of Gilgulim. Rabbis who believed in the idea of reincarnation include, from medieval times, the mystical leaders of Nachmanides, the Ramban, and Rabbeinu Bakya ben Asher from the 16th century, Levi ibn Habib, the Rabba, and from the mystical school of Sefat, Shlomo Chalkabez, Isaac Luria, known as the Ari, and his exponent, Chaim Vital. And from the 18th century, the founder of Hasidim, Israel Baal Shem Tov, later Hasidic masters, and the Lithuanian Jewish Orthodox leaders and Kabbalists, the Vilna Gaon. With the 16th century rational systemization of Cordoveran Kabbalah by the Ramak, and the subsequent new paradigm of Lurianic Kabbalah by the Ari, Kabbalah replaced Hakira, rationalistic medieval Jewish philosophy, as the mainstream traditional Jewish theology, both in scholarly circles and in the popular imagination. Isaac Luria taught new explanations of the process of Gilgul and identification of the reincarnations of historic Jewish figures, which were compiled by Chaim Vital in his Sha'ar HaGilgulim. The idea of Gilgul became popular in Jewish folk belief and is found in much Yiddish literature among the Ashkenazi Jews. It is also prevalent among the sources of the Sephardim as well. The Jewish process of reincarnation. The essential Kabbalistic text in regards to Gilgul is called Sha'ar HaGilgulim, the gates of reincarnation, or literally, the grate of the wheel. Based on the work of Rabbi Isaac Luria and compiled by his disciple, Rabbi Chaim Vital, it describes the deep, complex laws of reincarnation. One concept that arises from the Sha'ar HaGilgulim is the idea that Gilgul is paralleled physically by pregnancy. In Kabbalah, any higher spiritual truth is seen to be reflected in the lower forms in this physical world. And this is because the divine life force for this realm first descends through the chain of higher realms. We are presently teaching an English translation of the Sha'ar HaGilgulim. It is located on the Revealed Wisdom page of the Revealed website in the Advanced Classes column. The Ark in the Ari. Rabbi Isaac Luria's Ashkenazi synagogue in Sefat, Luria fully expounded the Kabbalistic doctrine of Gilgul. In this view, reincarnation is an expression of divine mercy. and Kabbalistic understanding of Gilgul, which differs from many Eastern religious views. The Gilgulim, the reincarnation, is not fatalistic or automatic, nor is it essentially a punishment of sin or a reward of virtue. In Judaism, the heavenly realms could fulfill Maimonides' principle of faith in reward and punishment. Rather, it is concerned with the process of individual rectification, or tikkun, of the soul. In Kabbalistic interpretation, each Jewish soul is reincarnated enough times only in order to fulfill each of the 613 mitzvot. The souls of the righteous among the nations may be assisted through Gilgulim to fulfill their seven laws of Noah. As such, Gilgul is an expression of divine compassion and is seen as heavenly agreement with the individual soul to descend again. This stress on physical performance and perfection of each mitzvah is tied to the Lurianic doctrine of cosmic tikkun of creation. In these new teachings, a cosmic catastrophe occurred at the beginning of creation called the shattering of the vessels of the Sephirot in the world of Tohu, which is chaos. The vessels of the Sephirot broke and fell down through the spiritual worlds until they were embedded in our physical realm as sparks of holiness, nitzutzot. The reason in Lurianic Kabbalah that almost all mitzvot involve physical action is that through their performance, they elevate each particular spark of holiness associated with that mitzvah. Once all the sparks are redeemed to their spiritual source, the messianic era begins. This metaphysical theology gives cosmic significance to the life of each person, as each individual has particular tasks that only they can fulfill. Therefore, Gilgulim assists the individual soul in this cosmic plan. This also explains the Kabbalistic reason why the future utopia will be in this world, as only in the lowest physical realm is the purpose of creation fulfilled. I'm going to excuse myself for about seven minutes. I apologize. Please wait for me. I will return. I'm leaving it recording running so that you can speak to each other. kids. I have returned, and I'm continuing where we left off, the spiritual dimension of all creations. In Kabbalah, from its initial medieval form onwards, creation is described as a descending chain of spiritual worlds of cause and effect. The new 16th century Kabbalistic paradigm of Isaac Luria extends the meaning of this with the concept of the holy sparks. Creation is a continuous process of divine vitality. All physical and spiritual creations only continue to exist due to the imminent divine light from God's will to create that they constantly receive. This imminent flow forms the sparks of holiness in any created form. And this teaches that the true essence of anything is only its divine spark within that gives it continual existence. If the light were to be withdrawn, the creation would cease to exist. This complete dependence on divinity is hidden in this lowest physical realm. But the souls and angels of successively higher spiritual realms are nullified to the divine unity in successively higher degrees. This explains the statement of Isaac Luria that even stones possess a subtle form of soul. Within the focus in Lurianic Kabbalah on cosmic tikkun rectification, accordingly, every leaf also possesses a soul that came into this world to receive this rectification. Above, there is a consciousness root of Gilgul. 16th century Lurianic doctrine was the first time that Kabbalah focused on Gilgul, because it forms the microcosmic parallel to the cosmic divine rectification that is taught by Luria. In medieval Kabbalah of the Zohar, which received its full rational synthesis in 16th century Cordoveran Kabbalah, immediately before the new teachings of Luria, Gilgul was not the focus as intellectual categorization was sought. Lurianic Kabbalah, accordingly, while also fully systemized in rational articulation, nonetheless focuses on divine soul levels above the intellect. The central doctrine of Luria is the Tzimtzum, that paradoxically transcends human logic. The tikkun rectification of the Tzimtzum involving the Birur, the elevation of the sparks of creation, and their soul parallel of Gilgul, similarly, are rooted in divine levels above the intellect. In the foundational Kabbalistic structure of the Ten Sefirot, Keter, the divine will, transcends the intellectual Sefirot and is the origin of all. The Lurianic idea that all physical and spiritual creations possess their particular bodily soul explains the notion that Gilgul can involve a person's soul occasionally being exiled into lower creatures, into plants, or even into stones. My commentary. I left the above sections in this basic class on Gilgulim so that one can learn potential mistakes that our egos cause us to make, to simplify what was said so that one can understand what is taught in Kabbalah. One, there is the Ein Sof, without which concepts consists of a vessel in its fulfillment. This vessel includes any and all desires. Two, In an evolutionary process from top down, there was a breaking of the vessels. This breaking of the vessels gives the impression, the illusion, that it is chaotic. Actually, each spark of the vessel that is concealed by the klipot has a known tikkun of correction. These tikkunim is affected by man doing mitzvot. There's also an aspect of time involved with the affecting of tikkun of some sparks. Certain people have the responsibility to do a mitzvah at a certain time, in a certain place, or not to do an action that their reactive nature starts them doing. If they either do what is supposed to be done, or do not do what is not supposed to be done, they affect tikkun, which is an actual and metaphorical elevation of the fallen spark. When all sparks are elevated, Mashiach will manifest, and perfection is attained. Five levels of the soul. In Jewish mysticism, the human soul has five levels that relate to different levels of the Sephirot. Based on an ancient Midrashic source, Kabbalah followed also, in Hasidic interpretation of Kabbalah, it gives names for these five levels. Their corresponding Sephirot have both outer spiritual functions, which are vessels, and inner dimensions, which are lights, that relate to outer manifestations of the human soul and their inner psychological soul powers. The five levels of the human soul in ascending order. The nefesh is called the life force, consisting of conscious aspect of the soul that's invested in action. Malchut, kingship, is in the Sephirot, the lowest level of soul that is an intermediary between the body consciousness and the upper levels of soul consciousness. The nefesh is in the blood, says the Torah. The Kabbalah tells us that the nefesh is the white blood cells and the immune system. The ruach, spirit consciousness, aspect of soul, invested in emotions. Six emotional sephirot, tesed to yesod, generally, potentially, enters all at the age of 13 for a boy and the 13th year for a girl. The third level, the neshama, the soul consciousness, aspect of the soul invested in the intellect. Bina, understanding in the Sephirot. Logic is the major tool of this level in both the negative and the positive aspects. The fourth level is Chaya, the living, transcendental, unconscious level of the soul. The vessel for unlimited light of conscious Chokmah, which is wisdom, the revelation of unconscious, outer Keter will in the Sephirot. And the fifth level, the Yechidah, the singular, essential, transcendent root of soul. It's a vessel for unconscious Keter in the Sephirot. Revelation of the inner Keter, the delight and soul essence of faith. The most basic component of the soul, the nefesh, is always part of the Gilgul process, as it must leave at the cessation of blood production, a stage of death. It moves to another body where life has begun. There are four other soul components and different nations of the world possess different forms of souls with different purposes. there are other processes of transmigration. And I'm going to stop the class here. I apologize. But this is a class that has a lot of information that you've already received and a lot of information that you will continue to receive in part two, which we will do next week. Does anyone have any questions? If you look at where we are in the landing page or in the class outline here, you'll see we're about halfway down, halfway through this class. And that's why it's a good place to stop, even though we do have a few minutes. And it would be a good idea if you have any questions to ask them. While you're unmuting yourself, I'll remind you there are two additional classes today. One is at 4:30, which is a deep Zohar class, and one which is at 7 p.m., which is the writings of the Ari for the Parasha of Ekev. I wish you all Shavuot Tov, a good week, good afternoon, and I hope to see you in the classes. Shalom Gadol to everyone.
Shalom Gadol, thank you.
Thank you. I apologize for having to stop past the middle for a few minutes. Shalom
Gadol. That's okay. Shalom.
Thank you. Shalom.